Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Eric Winstrom. He is the chief of the Pensacola Police Department. Eric, welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Good to be here.
Somebody's going to be like, you should have called him chief. Okay, sorry. Chief, welcome back. It's good to have you.
We're friends, I guess.
I know. And, you know, hey, it's Pensacola. We're a lot more relaxed about all these kinds of things. As far as I know, there haven't been any sort of big incidents in the past week, which I will take. I know Mike Wood doesn't like to use the Q word, so I will not use it either. But anything I'm missing, any big news incidents that you need to bring to our attention?
No, we strive to be boring. You know, a boring week for the police is a good week for everybody, and that's what we're shooting for. So we're just trying to do our thing, and the men and women are doing a great job out there. So,
you know,
can't take credit for it. We got a great police department.
I literally, I don't know, I had a brain fart for a second. I completely forgot about the one incident that it hasn't been, I mean, but the Cordova Mall takeover. You know, we talked about yesterday with the mayor. I asked him the question, was he satisfied with PPD's response and handling of it? And I'll kind of ask you the same question. I mean, I know these things are very difficult. 500 to even 15 is a very difficult ratio to figure out, but we've had rumors that there'd be other takeovers around town. Obviously, there was one out at the beach. There's been rumors at other places. I don't want to promote any particular one by saying them, but you're well aware of these things. So what can be done, should be done differently? Talk to me about what happened and what we can learn from it.
Well, we had a great plan, actually, and we did. We got a heads up about that takeover early on, and then it was a lot of back and forth with the management company of the mall and whose responsibility is what as far as communicating with the organizers. And it was the first time since I've been here that sort of large event had happened. And if we could do anything better, it's just the communication could be better, because we wanted them to reach out to the organizers first, because it's certainly not on us to tell someone that they can't go on private property. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, we got involved. The organizers took the post down, but you can't unring a bell. And 500 kids, you know, at most showed up, which is a significant amount for the police department, the size of a police department this size. How many officers can you even put over there? But we had a large presence over there. We did make two arrests, hopefully to send the signal that, illegal behavior won't be tolerated. But with that many kids, it looked like chaos.
Right.
So, but we've met with them all since. I think we have a better plan moving forward as far as connecting with these organizers faster. I suggested too, a lot of times they're very young kids. So the threat of a civil lawsuit might not, ring true, because they don't have any assets to give up, but we need to both be contacting them. And one of the conduits of that is our school resource officers, because these are young people that are often, in as young as seventh and eighth grade. And so our SROs have been part of the process now. And as other things pop up and we look at them, they're just going meeting with these kids, letting them know, this is not a path you want to go down. In my own experience in the last two agencies I've worked in, we've seen takeovers end up in tragedy and in violent crime and death. And fortunately, we didn't have that this time, but with 500 individuals there to have disorderly conduct, I bet, one or two or more of them may have been armed. So the potential is there.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear there was, two arrests. I thought there had been 15 or something like that is what had been originally reported. So glad it was fewer than that. Property damage, vandalism, not that serious
no,
or not enough?
No, not that big. It was just disorderly and, disrupted everyone. And if you think of it as far as the arrests go, if you look at the size of the mall with 500 kids, unless that police officer is viewing them do something illegal, they can't arrest them. So if they're just running through the mall, there's no way I can say, hey, you're not allowed to run in the mall. I'm a cop. That's the mall's responsibility. So if it's just disorderly behavior, there's no way for us to make an arrest. That's right. We really needed to get the cooperation of the mall and say, hey, it's your expectations if you want to. And that was the 15 contacts we made were actually for trespassing, that the mall said, hey, we don't want, unaccompanied minors who are doing this sort of behavior. If you see any, please tell them they must leave. And that's what we're not going to arrest them, but we're telling them, hey, you are being trespassed from this area. If you come back, you'll be arrested. So it's a little bit clunky. It's not like a private beach a public beach where the sheriff can make the rules and say, this is a curfew, these are standards. This is private property. And unless I'm watching them commit a crime in front of me, and running through the mall isn't a crime. So we really need that collaboration with that private entity to get a better result next time.
No, that's a great point, that the kind of behavior that might be disruptive or that you might find unpleasant as a, you know, like if I'm walking through the mall, I might not like to see that around me, doesn't necessarily rise to the level of a crime. And it's really more a matter of private property ownership, trespassing, you know, the kind of decorum rules that you're wanting to enforce and willing to enforce. That all makes good sense. And I know that, you know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, were it to continue, maybe you start to have conversations with them about age and or curfew kind of restrictions. Were it to happen in public at other venues, you might start to have those kind of conversations. But I don't think we're there yet, right? We're not there yet, right?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly right. And this is such a great community. And so I think the SROs are one of the school resource officers making those connections. We have our leadership team connecting with the SROs and actually reaching out to the parents, because I think a lot of these parents just don't or guardians, they're just not aware that this is happening. And at some point in that time, you have to say, hey, you got to do a better job seeing where is my teen going on this night and take that accountability. And once we get there, it's going to be safer for everybody.
No doubt. We're talking to Eric Winstrom. He is the chief of the Pensacola Police Department. Matt Coverdale. Matt Coverdale, no chance he's been on the force for 22 years. He's your new deputy chief. Really? 22 years?
He looks pretty young.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah, 22 plus now.
Any particular insight into why? I read your comments, and I thought they perfectly well describe him. You know, 110% effort. He's a max effort guy all the time. But, you know, any thoughts or comments on him as your deputy chief?
Well, number one, he's a brilliant guy, extremely knowledgeable. He's got the, you know, the historical knowledge about the police department that I don't have. The small operational details, the logistics, the technology stuff that coming in from the outside, I don't know. So he has that knowledge base. It just is a great compliment to me. His work ethic, he was there at 4:30 in the morning yesterday. He started his day. He worked a 17-hour day running that operation and for Kela, which went off fantastic. And we have excellent. The other three captains, phenomenal. And it was just a question of who's the best fit for the city, who's the best fit for me to complement my, you know, my abilities, and who carries the same vision that I have. And Matt's a true police officer. He's got that street experience, but also he has that knowledge of things. Like, it's his team that's leading the effort to enact a public-facing data dashboard. Something that, you know, is when you think about policing, that's not necessarily the top of people's list, but it's very important to be transparent. And so I needed somebody that really had that ability to focus. How are we going to improve our records management system? All of that stuff. He's on top of it, and we're going to move this department quickly in an even better direction than it already is.
The mayor had mentioned the other day, and I know you knew about this, but I was really impressed with your comments at the Pensacola City Council meeting addressing their questions about the Flock cameras. I thought your answers were fantastic on the subject.
Oh, thank you.
And I was glad that you showed up and did that. And, you know, I'm sure you would be willing to do that again if need arose. We'll find out whether the advocates adapt or whether they're just there to do their talking points. I vote probably the second, but we'll see. You always want to be optimistic. Yeah. But you guys have been, I think, you know, everybody's, the sheriff as well, has been a little bit more active about mentioning, hey, this is a crime we used the Flock cameras to solve in Pensacola Police. It was a domestic violence case, right?
Yeah, we just had one over the past week. I believe it was early Sunday morning. We had a very bad domestic violence case where it was a choking case, near strangulation. So a young lady, you know, lost consciousness or was near to losing consciousness. And this is a very bad guy, not only because of the domestic violence, but he also happened to be a narcotics dealer. And using Flock cameras, we very quickly were able to determine his direction of travel, very quickly able to put him in custody, and upon doing so got, you know, felony distribution level Oxycontin, cocaine. I mean, this was a drug dealer. He had over 20 pills of this and 20 grams of that, and, you know, a lot of cash. So domestic offender. Is he part of the, you know, the opioid issues that we're dealing with? Certainly. He's providing these poisons to people. And you can see just an overall bad guy. And it was Flock that got him off the street in record time before he could hurt anybody else.
Yeah, and I was really glad you made that connection as well, saying that the nexus between criminal violence and the drug trade, which is why the opioid, fund money was able to be used for the Flock cameras to begin with, I think, that connection is obvious when you say it, but maybe people had not been paying attention to that to grab that connection on their own initiative. You know, the other day I was doing a kind of a recap of some stuff dealing with the UWF Police Department, which is by all accounts doing, you know, great now under the leadership of Roman Jackson. And there were some things that they were doing that I, you know, you're fairly new in the job, and I didn't know if these things were, you know, even had good applications to the city, perhaps, but I wanted to raise them with you because I thought they were interesting. One was they're doing a My Gear registry, like basically on an app. As I understand it, you basically go and scan your computer, your laptop, your e-bike, you know, high-profile items that might get stolen. That way, if they go bust somebody or find them, they can return them to you. They had a 50 e-bike ring that they just busted, and I don't know whether something like that would make sense for a city, but it strikes me as, you know, if you voluntarily participate in registering your stuff so that if it ever gets stolen or if it ever tries to get pawned, there'd be a way to verify that and get it back to you.
Yeah, and colleges, you know, obviously they're policing a different community. Mm-hmm. They have college police departments have a lot of different priorities, but oftentimes they're on the leading edge of stuff that, you know, municipal police chiefs don't even think of. I wouldn't have thought of that as a possibility, maybe for logistics reason. But I guess if you take a population that's going to be there for, you know, 4 years max or so, and you know where they're going to be staying, you know, they don't have to notify you when they're leaving because you keep track of all that.
Yeah.
Might make more sense. I don't know if that would have application here, but I'm certainly looking forward to connecting with the chief and meeting with him. And I'm never to the point where I'm saying we're doing it right and that's it. Always looking for opportunities to do better.
Well, anything that's going to discourage private property theft and, you know, get people their stuff back more easily, I would think is, you know, better is
absolutely
better, right? On that note,
absolutely,
just because they said, he said that they're converting from regular bicycles to e-bikes. PPD's bike cops are selling regular bikes though, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Is that something
some officers see it as?
Go ahead.
It's a little bit of work exercise balance, you know, keeps the
right
officers in shape. And but I do see the value in the e-bikes in that they, you know, they can maintain that speed and uphill, et cetera. So something that budget time's coming up, something thinking certainly we can discuss and consider, especially I think an application probably for the downtown area that would make some sense. So we'll see.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether it would. I mean, same thing, like, you know, you can catch up to car speed almost on those things, and I can see applications where that would be pretty valuable. Last thing,
yeah.
I'm not going to have a chance to talk about it in depth today, maybe tomorrow, but the Supreme Court, speaking of new technology, I know you're a big fan of technology, but Supreme Court recently did oral arguments on a geofence warrant case. The short version is if you have Google, you give them permission to track your location history, and the police can go query that in the case of a bank robbery with a warrant. Google then comes back with a list. They refine that list. They eventually found the guy and convicted him. He's protesting that this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment because even though there was a warrant, the warrant did not have probable cause to search all of the people it searched, and that geofence warrants are an expectation of private privacy around that information. Have you used geofence warrants before? Tell me about the prevalence and the role of these in policing as you're familiar with it.
Yeah, I sure have used them. I've used them as long ago as probably 2020 in Chicago. Where we would do the exact same thing. A homicide would happen, and you know that there's an unknown offender. You know what time that homicide happened and where he was, and using a geofence warrant for, you know, whether it's Google or Meta or some other private entity that keeps that data, you can make a determination of where that phone was, where that person was. It's really helpful. I'm not real polarized as far as, you know, the legal which way it's going to go. I'm
yeah,
interested to hear what the Supreme Court says. It's certainly a very useful tool. No one's denying that, but I'm just not familiar enough with those constitutional arguments on that. It's interesting because it's all so brand new technology. And as I brought up many times with the Flock discussion, you know, these private entities are holding exponentially more data about you, whether you're using a search browser or just carrying your phone in your pocket.
Right.
And it is a concern to people, and I could see how this could go either way.
It'll be interesting
to find out.
It's a fascinating case. It's a fascinating application of rules that were certainly not written with that technology in mind. But the idea that you can basically go find everybody who was in this 3-block radius between the hours of 3 and 6 p.m. yesterday when the bank robbery was taking place, we can query all of their phone data and then figure out who was there and then kind of by process of elimination find our culprit. It's like surveillance after the fact. It is a fascinating technology. And I figured you had used it, but I was just kind of curious your thoughts on it. So
yeah, many, many, many times. It's very, very useful and helpful when you have a mystery. I mean, the law has actually changed just in the time that, that I've been familiar with it, in that when it started out, probably, you know, 2018 or so, when we were really getting into this, you could send a request out and get all the information for everything. Well, judges eventually were saying, hey, you know what? Show me that there's a nexus with the phone and the crime. And oftentimes it was as easy as, well, you know, this person killed somebody and it was over a drug transaction. And we know the drug transactions are often conducted over phone. So, and they would say, yep, that's close enough. I mean, it's true.
Got it. Yeah,
and
that makes
sense.
Then
we would find out. Yeah.
Eric Winstrom, he is the chief of the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Chief, thank you for the time. Great to see you last night at the concert, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew. Talk to you soon.